Good evening. Welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Later on, Building Bridges, opponents of France's new labor law nationwide walkout.
But first, the 95th anniversary of the Triangle Fire, an extraordinary poem commemorating March 25th, 1911, where 146 young immigrant workers died in a tragic fire at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory in New York's Greenwich Village. And we go to the poem by Safia Henderson Holmes.
From bareness to fullness, flowers do bloom. Whenever, however, spring enters a room. Oh, whenever, however, spring enters a room. March 25th, 1911. At the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, a fire claimed the lives of 146 people, mostly women, mostly children, in the plume of their lives, in the room of their lives, begging for spring, toiling and begging for spring. And in my head, as I read the history, afraid to touch the pictures, I imagined the room. I imagined the women, dressed in pale blues and pinks, some without heads or arms, sitting, some without legs or waists, hovering, hundreds of flowering girls, tucking spring into sleeves, tucking and tugging at spring to stay alive. Shirtwaist Factory Room, 1911. Crowded, hard, fast, too fast, closed windows, locked doors, smell of sweat, of wishes being cut to bits, needle stabs, electric shocks, miscarriages over silk, fading paisley, fading magenta, falling in love will get you fired. Forever old, never fast enough, buying flowers is wasteful, so hurry, hurry, grind your teeth and soul, $6 a week sent to grandfather, $4 a week sent to Aunt Ruth, sleep over the machine and you're done for, way before you open your eyes, ma'am, madam, miss, missus, mother, girlie, hundreds of flowering green spring girls in rows, waiting with needles in hands for spring to show. Women workers from Ireland, Poland, Germany, France, England, Grenada, Mississippi, thin clothes, thinner hopes, months full of why, of how, of when, answers always less than their pay, but the sewing machines grew like weeds, thick snake roots, strangling the flowers every day, strangling the roses, daisies, lilies every day, hundreds of blooming girls, hundreds of blooming spring girls. The Shirtwaist Building, 1911, 135 feet high, wooden, coal, three floors, not enough stairs, one fire escape, ending in mid-air, ending in the spring mid-air, a tender room of hundreds of blooming bright girls, hundreds of daisy bud girls, who pray for spring to enter their world, who pray and sweat for spring to enter their world. The strike the year before. And they shouted, open the doors, unwire the windows, more air, more stairs, more quiet time, more fire escapes, and to the ground, damn you, and more toilets, more time to be sick, more time to be well, and remove the fear, and slow it down, for God's sake, slow it all down. It's spring, they shouted. Hundreds of flowering girls, hundreds of flowering girls shouted, for spring to hurry, hurry, and enter their world. And Triangle won a half day, but the doors remained locked, windows remained wired, no extra air, no extra quiet time or sick time. The fear stayed, nothing slowed, and God watched. Hundreds of flowering girls twirl, hundreds of flowering girls willow and twirl. March 25th, 1911, at Triangle. Smoke. Smoke, stopping the machines, run to wired windows, run to locked doors, run to the one and only fire escape, everyone run to the air, hundreds of flowering girls, smoke, stopping eyes, stopping hearts, stopping worlds, elevator, move faster, elevator, you are a machine managed by a human being, move faster, come on, faster, carry all the flowering girls, carry all the sweet, sweet orchid girls, fire, catching bouquets of girls in a corner, tall, long-stemmed lilies on fire in a corner, from bloom to ashes in a corner, smell them in the rain, hundreds of tulip girls. On a window ledge, pliés for life, on a window ledge, lovely ribboned young ladies on their tiptoes, twirling, twirling, an arabesque for life, hundreds of flowering girls, smell them in the rain, hundreds of jasmine girls. The ladders were too short. The hoses were too short. The men holding the nets were not gods, only men, who never caught or trained to catch falling bodies or falling stars or hundreds of flowering girls, hundreds of carnation bud girls. And the girls were not angels, but girls jumping, not goddesses flying or hovering. They smashed. They broke into large pieces. Smell them in the rain. And the sidewalks opened in shame to meet the flowering girls. The sidewalks opened in such horrible shame to cradle the remains of violets. And the gutters bled for hours, choking on bones, shoes, buttons, ribbons, holy sewing needles. The gutters bled for hours, all the colors of spring, the cool magenta of delicate spring. And the fire ate the locked doors and the wired windows, ate the fast machines in their narrow rooms, ate the lace and hand-done pleats, the silk, the cotton, the linen, the crisp $6 a week, the eternal buzz of someone else's dreams, nightmares and screams of quiet girls, loud skull-cracking noises from shy girls. Smell them in the rain, the lilacs, daffodils in the rain. Spring, over 78 years later. Triangles now part of a university, with offices and polished intellect, arched, unwired windows, hydraulically controlled and unlocked doors, air conditioning, swivel chairs, marble floors, and fire alarms. But oh, hundreds of flowering girls still roam, hundreds of blushing spring girls still roam, 80 years later, in the paint, in the chrome, in the swivel of chairs, hundreds of blossoms twirling in the air, daring to descend if ever, oh ever, the fire comes again. Yes, like lead they will drop if ever, oh ever, the fire comes again to hundreds of flowering girls. Smell them in the rain, iris, peonies, magnolias, bending for the rain.
And that was poet Safia Henderson Holmes, as she read her epic poem commemorating the lives of those who died. And the poem itself serves as well as a tribute to Safia, who passed away and has left us, nevertheless, with her stirring words and the challenge to organize for workers' rights.
And on our next segment, we talk with Helene Bonneau, Assistant Director of the International Department of the CGT, Union Federation in France, about the growing mass movement in opposition to what the French government calls labor law reform and the nationwide general strike.
The government in France proposed a new, what they're calling a jobs contract, which is known as the first jobs contract, which passed on March 9th in its parliament. And they claim that it's designed to lower the 23% unemployment rate among the nation's young people. However, there has been enormous criticism of it, and there are those who say that it would chip away at workers' rights and endanger job security. Fill us in on what it really means.
It's first job contract, and it's meant only for young workers under 26 years. The problem is it's a 2 years trial period during which the employer has the right to fire the worker without notice or reason. It means that you can be employed for 2 or 3 days and then something happens and then you are fired without reason at all, meaning that you don't have any right to unemployment benefits, of course, and so on and so forth. The irony of this contract is that the government says it's meant for equal opportunity to young people. You know, there is no guarantee at all. It's completely unsecured. Where the government pretends that it's something meant and designed to fight precisely insecure contracts on short terms or even longer periods of time. But when you have what we call CDD, which is contract on given time, you know, for a given period of time, you know for how long you will be working. You will be working for 6 months, a year, or something like that. Then you will qualify for unemployment benefit, for example. Whereas in the case of CPE, you won't have any rights at all. So extremely insecure. It's not a good idea for young people who feel absolutely insecure. Majority of them feel they have no future. It's precisely one of the reasons of the riots in November or December last year. The young people, especially in the suburbs, feel they have no future. So if you give them this kind of insecure contract, then you add something to the insecurity of their lives. That's the main reason why we are against it. And the second reason why we are against it, it's that it's the second kind of contract this government has been passing through Parliament. Because the government passed through Parliament last July another kind of contract, which is called CNE, for new jobs. That meant for workers, irrespective of the age, but in small businesses, less than 20 employees. In both contract, the employers have all rights to fire the workers anytime and without them giving any reason. So those two types of contracts are discriminating against certain type of workers and extremely dangerous, because it means that everybody in the long run will be in an insecure situation. And so we can't allow the government to chop the labor law in little pieces each time for kind of workers, because the government wanted to pass a third kind of contract only for senior workers. Why not special contracts for women between 25 and 35, for example? Because they are also in a very difficult situation in terms of unemployment. The situation of job creation with the CNE, which was passed in July last year, shows that these kind of special contracts do not create jobs.
We have a very different situation here. Do workers in general have protection against arbitrary dismissals in France, aside from just unemployment, even if they're not in a union?
Of course. I mean, if you are dismissed on just arbitrary decision of your employer, you can go to a labor court. These labor courts belong to the legal system, but the judges are elected by the employers and the workers, union or not. And those labor courts decide from the legality of the dismissal. And in most cases, employers are condemned when they fire someone on arbitrary grounds. So there is a level of protection. It is important, you know, to maintain that, because it's a guarantee of certain stability in your life. Because if you can be fired any time, how can you apply, for example, for a loan in order to get, I don't know, a car or to start, I don't know, something. I mean, if you want to buy your house or your flat, how are you going to do it if you have no stability in your life?
The unemployment rate of France's youth is more than 20%, or twice the national average. This whole concept now of job flexibility, which is a nice way of saying that you really cut back on workers' rights, but it's being done in Denmark and the Netherlands and Sweden and many places which are looking at reduced unemployment by casualizing labor more. What really is the response of the organized labor movement to this? What are the answers to these issues?
I think that the situation is very different from one country to the other. For example, in northern European countries, definitely the governments have been, and employers have been, negotiating with the unions more flexibility. But more flexibility, but the workers and the unions have won more guarantees in terms of retraining and unemployment benefits. Extremely important, because if you are more flexible, you know, you have more risk to be fired. You are to be given a chance to be retrained in a job where you have a good chance to be recruited, and during the period of retraining, to be paid for that. So this is the case in Scandinavian countries. This is the case in Denmark, in Sweden. It's what they call flex security. But our government pretends we should do the same, but they retain only flexibility part of the project. They don't want to hear about security. That makes the big issue for us, because through the dispute we have at the moment with our government, the problem is that if the government succeeds to implement full flexibility without security at all, because unemployment benefits are decreasing, government has been pressing for the past successive government for the past 10 years in decreasing the amount of and the duration of unemployment benefits. So if the present government succeeds in imposing flexibility to all, while starting now with young people and workers in small firms, then it means that the French government will succeed in organizing social dumping without European countries, more flexible French workers in all aspects. That's why the struggle is so important, of French workers so important to workers in other European countries, because it could set precedent.
The struggle in France has been escalating for months now. It started with the youth, and now the workers and the unions are involved. Could you give us the highlights of the escalation of the fight back?
It didn't start right now. When the government imposed the CNE, this contract for small firms, in July, the government passed it according to a fast-strike procedure, which prevents long discussions, amendments in Parliament, so that the people, generally speaking, the unions, will be in such a situation that they won't have the time to explain to the people, to the workers, what's at stake, and start organizing the demonstrations and the protests. In addition to this, the government succeeded in passing it at the time of summer vacation, when it's very difficult to organize demonstrations and organize protests. So the protest against that contract, CNE, which is similar to the one called CPE today, in fact started in October. And in October we had a huge demonstration, and there were demonstrations all over France. Over 1.5 million people demonstrated at the time. But the government insisted it should be implemented, pretending that it would create jobs. And government has been very busy all that time saying, yes, it created jobs. And whereas all data, you know, show it's not true, not at all. And then come the unrest, the riots in the suburbs in October and November. And mainly because in those parts of the country, in those suburbs, the level of unemployment of young people is even higher than the national average, because there are no jobs around, in addition to which the situation is such that the kids living in those areas have no future at all, because they are dropouts. There is no chance for them to go through some kind of training which would open them the perspective of a job, safe job. That's the reason why they feel no future. And so during the riots, the government has a brilliant idea to pose the state of emergency as if we were at war. And actually the young people in the suburbs, and not only young people, but the people at large in the suburbs, felt that it was a war against the poor, against all those who are excluded from society. And then, beginning mid-January, comes this proposal for new first employment contract. And the government did exactly the same thing, passing it through Parliament through fast-track procedure. And so the people felt, for Christ's sake, what's happening? I mean, without any discussion, any consultation of students or youth organizations or labor organizations, nothing. They were determined to pass it, and they passed it through fast-track. Now the government is saying, we want to discuss, we want to dialogue. And whenever the young people go to the street to protest, well, they send the police and so on and so forth. Government, understanding that situation is really difficult, convened a meeting with the labor organizations, but tried to divide labor organizations from students and youth organizations, and organized two different meetings, one with labor organizations, and then convened the students and youth organizations to different meetings. So labor organizations decided to go to the meeting with the prime minister to tell him, well, don't try to divide us. In this we are united. We are absolutely conscious you are trying to divide us. And the only solution is to withdraw this law and then start discussing about modernization of the situation of employment for young people and so on and so forth. And young people refused to attend the meeting. It was impossible for the government to divide the movement, and the movement is growing. More and more people express in public opinion polls that they are against the law and the law should be withdrawn. And so on Tuesday, we have this call for strikes and work stoppages and huge demonstrations all over France.
The protests really seem to have been a test for the conservative prime minister, Dominique de Villepin. They actually highlight the challenges faced by European governments, who are now really beginning to reform their job markets to be complicitous with or to deal with globalization. How do you look at these issues?
Europe in itself is, how can I say, some sort of concentrated example of what is globalization. We have in Europe highly developed and really underdeveloped one. So this imbalance between the industrialized and the underdeveloped parts of Europe is a huge challenge. So the issue is to assist the less developed or underdeveloped parts of Europe to grow, develop in order to come to the same level as the rest of the continent. For that, it would mean to have real development plans, starting from education, research, and also to dedicate huge amounts of money to invest in the development of those parts of the continent. The problem is that the European Union, speaking only of European Union countries, are functioning in a way now that especially the 10 new member countries, those we joined in 2004, are not given the same advantages, financially speaking, in terms of investment as, for example, the countries which joined earlier, such as Ireland or Portugal, Spain, Greece, which have been given really an opportunity to join the club of the rest of Europe through investments, European investments, helping to the modernization of these countries in terms of education, healthcare, transportation, and generally speaking, the organization of the country, the economy. It would also need joint European plans for the development and especially research and development. But for the time being, this, which was called the Lisbon Strategy, is not implemented at all. And the strategy of investing more in the new member countries is not working. The budget is a full catastrophe from the point of view.
A one-day general strike. If the government doesn't back down, where do you see things going from there?
Well, listen, it's not a one-day general strike. It's not exactly that. Each union, according to its consultation of its membership, has taken a decision, for example, to organize strike. Well, it's one-day strike, for example, in the railways, definitely, and also in the subway system in Paris. In many towns in France, the transportation system will be affected, except for the period where people will go to attend demonstrations, where the transportation system will work, definitely, in order to help the people, you know, to go to and attend demonstrations. In other branches, it very much depends on local situation. How the unions themselves will decide to take part can be shorter work stoppages, depending very much on decisions by the unions and the workers. But in many sectors, it will be a one-day strike. But it's not generalized. It's not a decision by all unions to launch a general strike.
This whole debate is clearly highlighted against the run-up to the French presidential and legislative elections next year. How do you see this playing out for the prime minister, who certainly has aspirations towards the presidency?
Well, he hasn't said so, but obviously he has, you know, and it seems that there is a huge fight between him and the second in government, Sarkozy. You know, it's a very strange feeling that Sarkozy has developed a whole strategy of breaking away with past and so on, very radical strategy on the right. But at the moment, Villepin is using the same strategy. So if this fails in the public opinion, it means that such strategies will fail for Sarkozy as well. And I think it's a bit ridiculous, actually, to think about presidential elections right now, because so many things can happen within a year. In addition to which, if candidates don't show the capacity to offer something really different from this policy, well, they stand no chance at all to be elected or to be listened to by the people, because the people want really something different now.
Do you think that'll happen? Do you think the kind of developmental approach for Europe that you talked about will be debated and that will be the thing that will break the logjam here?
Right now, I'm afraid it's not on the agenda, but it will have to be, because the situation in France is not really exceptional. Of course, all over the papers and on all possible TVs and the radio shows, because it's a show, definitely. But we have similar situations in other countries, not the only one country, you know, suffering from that kind of disease, even though you will always have a higher temperature in France. But the issue of European policies and investment, this issue will have to be on the agenda of all politicians, because there is no other way around.
Excuse
especially
me.
In the framework of globalization, because country alone can't can't win in globalization. You have to be many. It's a matter of scale because France is only 62 million inhabitants. It's a small country compared to China or even the United States. So in the framework of the European Union, it makes sense to invest in industrial development, energy development, and generally speaking, in sustainable development. It makes sense at this level.
Some of the slogans are talking about the CPE as a Kleenex contract. Young workers don't want to be thrown away like tissues, and people are being tired of being squeezed lemons. Unemployment's only a part of the story, and there clearly are millions that are now caught in the treadmill of short-term employment schemes. Do you see this momentum continuing to build and to mount as a real challenge to the schemes of globalization, which has wreaked havoc with the organized labor movement and the development of a workforce that has any rights and benefits and is empowered?
The issue of decent jobs is a fundamental issue. Not only the content of jobs, but also the issue of job security, that is the rights. These are essential issues. And they are essential issues for the stabilities of the countries all over the world in terms of social peace, but also in terms of development. If you have only unsecure jobs, it's very difficult to have plans to develop. You can develop only on the basis of a certain security in terms of jobs, of course, but also of social safety. That's why we have developed, for example, a whole new idea about lifelong job safety, which would mean that workers in the periods when there is less work, they could shift to training schemes, but then get as safety wages. Wages related to the scheme, which would allow them to retrain without thinking about the future on a daily basis. It's an idea which is being discussed among unions, and the majority of unions agree with that. We have to go to something like that in order to secure the future of the country in terms of education. Because if we don't train the people right now for tomorrow, what will be the future of the country?
Good luck with the protests, and hopefully the people in this country will start to look at what's going on there and start to apply it in the United States. Thank you.
As they say, we have nothing to lose but our chains. Workers of the world unite.
Well, it's quite relevant.
Thank you again.
You were listening to French Strikes with Hélène Bonneau, International Department of the CGT Union Confederation from France. We have many lessons to learn from those abroad. And this has been a Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Tune in next week. Same station, same time.